three Geffen Pashas Devarim.
Right, 4 years ago, when I was leaving, it was my last Tisha B'Av in Eretz Yisrael, and I was there in the night of Tisha B'Av, in sort of an American style Beis Medrash. And it was, I'd say, it was very chutznik. You know, I thought to myself, listen, this is my last Tisha B'Av in Eretz Yisrael. I want to meet some real Yidden. I want to really see some Yidden who know what a Tisha B'Av is, who understand what a Tisha B'Av is. You know, all my time in Chutz Aretz, I've always heard that in Eretz Yisrael they really feel it, whereas in Chutz Aretz we don't really feel what Tisha B'Av is all about. So I walked out of the base of Medrash that I was in, and I thought I'd go to Zichron Moshe. I'd heard that in Zichron Moshe, that the minhag used to be on Leil Tisha B'Av, as they were reading through the Eicha, as they read through the Kinnus, they would tear out page by page and put it into Seamus, hoping that this would be the last Tisha B'Av that would be in the Golos. So I ended up going to Zichron Moshe, and I got there. Could be that it was all over. So I was back on the streets looking for a real experience, looking to try and find someone who would be real connected to the Tzara, to the evil of Tisha B'Av. So I went on the streets and I asked Yerushalmi Yid, you know, where can I find the Yid? Where can I find Yidden who are really misabel? Is there a place that exists in Yerushalayim? So he told me to go to Tzvi Meir Zilberberg. So I get there. There'd been already 5 minutes into Shemoneh Esra. I waited another 20 minutes. And because I was there, wasn't davening with them, the Shemoneh Esra of Maariv, I found a place for myself very near to Tzvi Meir. After Maariv finished, they set up a nice, comfortable chair for him. And he comes, he sees that this nice, small, comfortable chair been set up for him. He moves it aside and he sits on the regular plastic stool that all the rest of us were sitting on. And then the Baal Korah begins to read the Eicha. And I was mamish opposite him. And I saw this whole pile of tissues next to him. I was wondering, you know, what's going to do? A huge pile of tissues. And as the Megillah begins to be read, Reb Tzvi Meir begins like with a few sobs, with a moaning, and all of a sudden those tears falling down his face, crying. And I was amazed. And he went on for the whole throughout the whole Megillah, throughout the Kinnus of the night. There were some real people there who felt what it means to experience a goddess, what it means to not have a base of Mikdash. Rabbi Ruchim, he gives a marshal to explain all the Moyadim, to explain every moment in the calendar. He gives an example of this guy who's sick, person who's sick, and he's told by the doctor, you should go to the mountains. Go to the mountains, and you'll feel much better there. So he comes back after a month, and he goes to the doctor and he says, I don't feel any better. So the doctor says to him, you know, what did you do while you were there in the Alps? What were you doing while you were there in the mountains? So he says, listen, most of the time I wasn't feeling up for getting out of my bed. And when I felt a bit more energetic, I sat on a chair. So the doctor says to him, I send you to the Alps because you've got to get out, you've got to hit those altitudes, you've got to go up those mountains. If you just stay in your bed, you're not going to be able to reach those, you're not going to be able to feel better. So Ruchim used that as a way to explain that the same is with every single part, with Moyadim, with the 3 weeks. We've got to get out. By getting out of those and reaching those altitudes, we're able to take away what's there, what's been put in there, the Ruchnius that's there for us to be able to take out. So I want to talk about what are the altitudes that a person has to reach during the 3 weeks, the Bein Amtzarim, the 9 days in Tisha B'Av. What's that Avodah? Where are we supposed to get to? You know, then if you read the Sfarim, the Siva Shalom, and the Sifrei Musa, everyone is screaming that the 3 weeks has got such a tremendous power. The Siva Shalom, he says that when we talk about the Geula, it's like a seed. It's like a tree. And when you put it in the ground, the shell dies and what's left is this eternal force that grows. And these days with the fasting, the no eating, the no showering, you remove that outer shell and that exposes that life force from within us. And we can become that tree during this time. And hopefully by the end of the 3 weeks, the Kodesh Baruch Hu will say, now I see you ready. And it'll be the last Tisha B'Av that we have. So how do we get there? So we all know we'll start with the famous Gemara that we all know. How did Klal Yisrael get to where we are? So we know that the 12 spies were sent into Eretz Canaan to go and spy out the land, and they came back crying because Baruch said, "Atem b'chisem b'chia shalchinam," you cried. And Hashem said, "Not only will I destroy this nation, but for all generations, this will be a day. That will be a day of destruction." And Tisha B'Av is that day. This was the worst punishment that ever happened to the Jewish people. And the question that's always asked, and I'm sure you've heard it many times, is what was so terrible? What did they do so wrong? Moshe Rabbeinu the 12 leaders, these were people that were responsible for their tribe, for their shevet. And they go into it, they go there, they're responsible, they've got to come back with the reports. Because they've got children, they've got families, and they want to know what we expect on the other side, what's going to happen. And they go there, and what do they see? They see that there's death everywhere. Wherever they're walking, they're seeing death. They go into one town, they experience death. They go into another town, there's more death. Funeral after funeral. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was organizing that in order that they should be preoccupied. And you know, when they see the new guests, they wouldn't be asking, well, you know, what are you doing in this place? Why are you spying out this place? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that they'd be too preoccupied with death in order to look at the Meraglim. But they come back, and they say that there were giants. They come with large troops because there were giants there. They say there were fortified cities because there were fortified cities. They were saying the truth. And if they were saying the truth, then what did they do wrong? What was so bad about their chet? Because Baruch Hu says, "Atem b'chisem b'chia shalchinam," you cried. Seems like, you know, they spoke Lashon Hara to Yeles. They had to say what they were saying. The other chinam, which is mentioned on Tisha B'Av, the Sinas chinam. So we know during the second base of Migdash, Klal Yisrael were learning Torah, Klal Yisrael were full of chesed, and the Gemara says that the reason why the base of Migdash was destroyed was because of Sinas chinam. Now, last week I heard something which really struck my mind. You know, when you hear Sinas Chinam, what's it? How's everyone translate it? Translate it as baseless hatred, right? There's no reason to argue what you're arguing about. Listen to this. You know, we say that Sinas Chinam is baseless hatred, is fighting for no reason. But if you look at the Gemara in Gittin, when it describes what was happening there at the time, it wasn't baseless hatred. At the time, there was an ideological war between the Baryonim and the Rabbonim. The Romans, they wanted to come and conquer Yerushalayim. And the Baryonim were saying, "We're going to stand up, we're going to fight." And the Rabbonim, they were saying, "We'll adjust, we'll make it work. We'll still be able to hold on to Yerushalayim, to what we have." There was a real ideological war between the Baryonim and the Rabbonim. And yet, the Gemara still calls that Sinas Chinam. Why is that? Why is that Sinas Chinam? That's a major dispute. This was a reason to fight with one another. So why does the Gemara call that sin askara? And my Rebbe Rabakovitz, he said that the argument wasn't baseless, but the hatred was baseless. You can hate an ideology. You can hate what a person stands for, but you can't hate the person. Even when the ideological differences are justified, but the hatred is never justified. You can hate an ideology, but you can't hate the person. I saw an atziv, might not be a chiddush to you, but when I saw it in the Hagdama to Bereishis, in Hemagdava, this is what the atziv says. The atziv, he says, B'chubren bai sheni, shoydor ikei shufal ufsalto. This was a generation. Pirashu shoya tzaddikim v'chassidim. Voimei Torah. They were great. They were learning Torah. Full of chesed, gemachim, and every other amazing organization there is, and they're all great. Ach, so what was the problem? Ach lo yehoyu yishorim b'halicha selamim. They weren't straight. What does that mean? Pesinas chinam b'libam. That is sinas chinam b'libam. What is that? Zeze chodshu es mishuroyu shunoyek shreke data. Each one suspected one another when someone wasn't doing what they did. Mishuroyu shunoyek shreke data miras Hashem. They didn't look like me, they didn't talk like me, they didn't dress like me. Shreke data miras Hashem shahoyu tzadoki. As soon as they weren't doing the exact same thing that I was doing, they would accuse them of being a tzadoki. You don't look like me. You don't speak like me. You don't dress like me. We don't daven in the same way. We don't speak in the same way. Apikuros. He's a tzadoki. That's what the Netziv says was the basis for the sin aschina b'chubren b'ayishen. When we were born and trained to look at everything from our own perspective. We look at the world from our own way. And as a child, we see only the things that we want to see it as. And we grow up and we think to ourselves, if only the world would see it the way I did, if only my children would understand that I know everything, if only my partner would know and understand that I know everything there is to know, then the world would be a much better place. And the goal of life is to change that perspective. When you change that filter, you're able to see the MS about everything. The MS in our in Ben Adam Chaveroi. The MS in our Ben Adam Lemakim. It's about changing the filter to find the MS. I read a story about this lady, she's in Ben Gurion. And she gets very nervous, she comes early before the flight. She decides to buy herself a book, a drink of water, and a bag of cookies she treats herself to as well. And she goes and sits down, the gate hasn't opened. And she says, "Oh, let me relax." She just gets very nervous before the flights. And she sits there with her bag of cookies. She opens up a book. And she begins to have her cookies. There's a lady sitting next to her. Smiles at her. And she begins to eat from the bag of cookies as well. And this lady's fuming. This is my bag of cookies. And she takes a cookie. The other lady takes a cookie. And there's like a race between the cookies. I'm grabbing one, the other one's grabbing one. And this is my bag. She's fuming about it. And she grabs, gets the last cookie. And the other lady is taking it. She's holding on to it. One lady takes a half, the other lady takes a half. She's fuming. She gets up and she runs to the gate. She gets onto the plane. The other lady, as she walks past her, she just smiles. And the lady's like, "The nerve of that person who took my bag of cookies." She's fuming. And she says, "I've got to grab hold of myself. I've got to calm down." She goes into her handbag. She takes out her bottle of water. And in the handbag, she finds her bag of cookies. Did you get it? She was eating the other person's bag of cookies. Okay. So at the beginning, there was a feeling of anger. At the beginning, there was a feeling of embarrassment, of fuming, which is justified. And that feeling goes to a feeling of embarrassment. that feeling goes to, wow, what an amazing person. I was taken from their bag of cookies and they allowed me to take it. The more you learn about another person, the more you understand more and understand where they're coming from, the more you look deeper into what's going on in that person's situation, the more you start to shift your feelings. The more you start to shift your perspective from a place of not understanding, from a place of brokenness, to a place of ahava, to a place of real b'dav nechaveira. Missing that ability to shift the perspective is what was missing on Tisha B'Av. That was the b'chiyah shel chinam. The miraglim, they return, they come back from Eretz Yisrael. They say, the fruits are large, the fortified cities, the lands are Eretz Yisrael, Yoshveha. And they came to the conclusion, b'sinas Hashem. They came to the conclusion, b'sinas Hashem, Hashem hates us. That's why He took us out of Mitzrayim. How could they say that? After all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for them. He took them out of Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, the Makkos. Imagine the clothes that we're wearing today, that we've been wearing for 9 days. It was all clean while they were wearing it. All ironed. And yet they still come out and they say, B'sinas Hashem. Hashem says, I told you I'm taking you to Eretz Zavas Cholov Dvash. I told you I'm taking you. He told Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet the Meraglim, they go and they come back with such bad reports. We distrusted him. We said that Kosh Baruch was taking us out to be killed in the Midbar. After all that Hashem did for us, with all the miracles, we still entertained that notion, that momentarily lapse of emunah, that Kosh Baruch was an adversary of us. Here we come to something which I want to take a bit deeper. Rabbeinu Yoda in Shaar Shlishi, towards the end, he brings a pasuk of the Tehillim that Vatiragnu ba'aleichem, this week's parsha. He says the Klai Yisrael in the desert were Nargonim. Why Nargonim? He says the Nargonim is one of the four cuts, one of the four types of people. The Reina Makabal Pnei Hashchina. He says a Nargon is someone who's always complaining, always sees the bad side in what his friend does. And even though you do that person a favor, he's a Nargon. He doesn't appreciate the favor. He doesn't trust the Meitav. That Meitav could do everything for him. But he's a Nargon. He refuses to see that the toy that someone else does for them. And there the Rabbeinu Yonah says, this is what was happening on Leil Tisha B'Av. This was the Besinas Hashem. They were Nargonim. They were not able to appreciate and see all the toy that someone else had done for them. That was their ideology. The ideology of Besinas Hashem. The Sephora there, he says that they thought that Kosh Baruch had never forgiven them for what happened in Mitzrayim. What they had done in Mitzrayim. Even though they had got so much until that point, they thought now was the time for payback. Now was that time. And that triggered, that Bechiya Shachinon, that Besinas Hashem, is what triggered history. From that night, we've never been at peace. Because they didn't see how it all came from a place of Ahava. They didn't see how Hashem was doing everything that was going to turn out for a good purpose. I heard from a Rav in London. It was this Erev Tisha B'Av. He gets a phone call at 12 o'clock at night. And the boy says, can I please come over to your house? So he says, it's a busy time, just preparing for Rosh Hashanah now. And the boy's crying on the other side of the phone. He said, fine. You know, it sounds like you've got to come over. He comes over to his house. He sits him on the table. And the boy says that, I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me, but I don't understand why am I going through this insane. So the Rav says, what do you mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you? What do you mean? So he said, a couple of years ago, I was off school, I just had to go to choir practice that morning in town. So he heads out early, he goes on the local bus, and he looks at his watch and he sees that he looks like he's going to be early for his choir practice. So what does he do if he's a bit early? He gets off the bus and he's going to go into a local coffee shop for a bit. He goes out the bus and as he gets out the doors, He feels this massive explosion, and there's smoke, and there's fire, and there's noise, there's screaming, the sound of death, the sound of an attack. But he feels himself, he sees that he's alive. And he tries to call up his parents to tell him that he's okay, but the phone's all dead. He goes to the payphone, he tries to use the phone box over there. All the lines are dead. He's in the middle of town, he wants to tell his parents that he's okay from that explosion. And he starts running home. Hour, 2 hours, he's crying, he's feeling that he survived, and he gets home. And when he arrives home, he says, I'm here, I'm arrived, I'm okay. And his parents, they burst into tears. And they say, we were so worried for you. There were a whole bunch of explosions on buses and trains around London at nine o'clock this morning. It was the 7th of July. And the boy says, no, it wasn't 9 o'clock. It was at 8:30. He looks at his watch again, and he sees that his watch is still at 8:30. Then he said to the Rav, I have this watch, even though it doesn't work, I never replace that battery. Because when I think and I realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked out that this battery put into this watch at the exact time, because if I would have looked at my watch that morning, I would have used another watch. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed that this battery would be put in at that time, so on this day it would be not working. I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me. That's the opposite of an arrogant. Is able to see and appreciate the love, all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for him. The Borei Olam, who loves and manages every moment of our life, and calculates things only in the best way. Now, Tisha B'Av is a very, very confusing day. It's full of, say, stiras. You have a Pesach, which is Zman Cheiros. You have a Rosh Hashanah, V'chaim. Tisha B'Av seems to be a few stiras. On one hand, it's Avelos. There's a minhag brought down in the Rishonim that people, when they get Aliyah to the Torah on Tisha B'Av, they'd say Baruch Dain Emes. Kilo with the Mason Mutar Lefanov. A day on the Chazal of Mede where we sit on low chairs. Mamish, to make it like a Yom Avelos, as if we are Veilim Mamish. On the other hand, we know that Tisha B'Av is a Moed. It's a moyed. We even have to find a heter that if chas Hashem there's a levaya that you can give a hesped. We don't say yamcha Hashem b'yom tzara. Erev Tisha B'Av, we don't say tachnun. What Chazal trying to do on Tisha B'Av? On one hand, you see that it's a moyed. On the other hand, it's full of avelas. It's the most, you know, after a whole 3 weeks, 9 days, and the night and morning of Tisha B'Av is avelas. And on the other hand, it's a day which is a moyed. So I heard from Elia Brundi. He brings a medrash in Eicha. It's a pasuk in Eicha, in fact. He says, Hisbiani v'amruri. The pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he filled me up with mora. Hivani lana. So lana is a poisonous wheat which you can't eat. Mora is what we use on Pesach, to be mekayem the mitzvah saseh of mora, achilas mora. And you can't eat lana. Lana is something poisonous, it's not real. Achilas is something the Gemara says you can't eat. So the Medrash there in Eicha, he says, Mashis biyani belel shel Pesach. That which I got full on, that which I ate on Leil Pesach, hivani belel Tisha B'Av lana. It led on Tisha B'Av to something poisonous. What does this mean? Stamazoi, by the way, what's the connection between Pesach and Tisha B'Av? You know that Tisha B'Av and Pesach always fall on the same night. This year, when was Seder night? The first night Seder was Monday night. And Tisha B'Av, this year, falls on a Monday night. What's the connection between Tisha B'Av and Pesach? The first night, Achilas Mora, which was something which happened on Leil Pesach, to the Hirvani Lana on Tisha B'Av. So on Pesach, the Mora that we eat, as bitter as it is, It's actually something which is edible, something which is healthy. But Tisha B'Av, the Hivani Lama is something poisonous. So we know that on Pesach, the halacha is, that what do we have first? The matzah of the mara. What do we have first? We have the matzah first and the mara. Now we were taught in Cheda that the mara is v'yimara is chayim. To remember everything that was bitter, and the matzah was zeichah v'cheiros, the going out of Mitzrayim. So really, it should be the other way around. Really, it should be first we have the mara, the avdus, the mirus, and afterwards we should have the matzah. Remember the cheiros. So why is it first we have the matzah, as Gemara says, and achar kach we have the mara? Why is it that way around? So Rabbi Brundi, he said like this. He said, because what's Pesach there to teach us? He said, the real reason why we're eating the mara on Pesach is to appreciate that not only the cheiros that happened on Leil Yetzias Mitzrayim was cheiros, that was good for us, but even the mara that we're having was coming from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that the bitterness itself was good for us. Says, look at what happened. The Klai Shor was supposed to be Mitzrayim for 400 years. And if we would have been there that long, in the Kur HaBalzam, we'd never been taken out. Ramban, or Achayim, they all say we'd never been taken out if we'd have been there for 400 years. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shif is a case. HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked out, he made it harder, the suffering harder, in order that we should get out earlier. 210 years. He made it harder in order that we should go out quicker. And the Meruas itself, the Avdus itself, was there to knock out any feeling of Gashmias that a Yid is supposed to have. A Yid, after Mitzrayim, he became Ruchni. We had to go down to Mitzrayim. The Meruas was all part of making us into greater people. These were all tremendous Gzeiras. But all that Mara was coming from a Havas Hashem. It was all there to get us to our Tachlis. And therefore the Mara comes after eating Matzah. After seeing how the Cheiros, we can have the Mara and see that even the Mara itself was Cheiros. It came from the same place as the Matzah did. That was the Hisbiyani Bamriri. But somehow the message got lost. Somehow by the time the Yidden came to Leil Tisha B'Av, and Klai Shor said, B'sinas Hashem ha'yitzionim b'mitzrayim. They had seen, they had learned that lesson of what the moral was there to teach us. Even the bitterness there in Mitzrayim was there for us to reach our tachlis. And the shayrish of Tisha B'Av, is the Meraglim. Because we've travelled and travelled. We've suffered, we've travelled, suffered and travelled. Because we still haven't found that Mara. We still haven't found that in the Mara is the Havas Hashem. And I think, Rebbe Brundi, I'm sorry, he says, that could be why that the Tisha B'Av itself is supposed to be a Moed. That in the Tisha B'Av, in the Avedas, we're supposed to see how that was a Moed. That Tisha B'Av itself, if it wasn't for the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, we wouldn't be here today. And the takeout of Tisha B'Av is that even though we after all the kinnus, after we've read all the terrible things that we read in the kinnus, we can still say, we won't say Yam Hashem B'Yom Tzara. We won't say that. Because deep in there, that we know that's coming from a place of love. Deep in there, we can see how all of that was gained there to our tachlis. And the Tisha B'Av itself, we won't, and an Erev Tisha B'Av, we won't say Tachnun. To get to that feeling, to get to that ability to understand, it's not B'sinas Hashem. It's all Ahavas Hashem. The places that we go, the experiences that we have in our life, and every challenge that we have, is all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a story I heard about Benji Hyman. Benji Hyman, who was born a healthy child, at the age of 4, he begins to experience seizures. And the seizures at the beginning were short-lived, they weren't lasting for long. And by the time he turned 5, 6, his parents had to hold on to him. He was lashing, running, moving everywhere, not in control of himself. And his parents had to hold him down, otherwise he'd be damaged, he'd hurt himself. And as time went on, it took over his whole life. 7 years old, he went to the doctors, and he said, "Doctor, he's taking over his whole life, he can't even be in school." And they said, "Listen, there's only one very dangerous operation that he can do. But other than that, there's nothing really that you can do for him." After another year of trying to control these seizures, all other types of things, they see that if we don't do something, he has no life. We need to do something now. So they go back to the doctor and they ask him, "You know, what was this dangerous procedure that you said that we can do?" So he says, there's an operation where we're going to have to operate on the brain, and we'll try and locate where the seizures are coming from and remove that part of the brain. So the parents, you go to Rabbanim, the Davin, and they come and they ask advice from many doctors. And they come back to the doctor and they say, "We want to go ahead with the procedure." And, you know, Benji's wheeled into the operating room, the parents outside, the davening for the health of the child, the operation should be successful. And he comes out, the doctor says, "Baruch Hashem," we don't say Baruch Hashem, but he says the operation was successful. Operation successful, and from that moment on, Benji, he gets better, he's full of life, he's living, he's going to school, he has friends, life is amazing, Purim is his favorite time of the year, he could dress up, be who he wants to be. All those years of childhood where we'd missed out, he now had a moment where he can enjoy himself, be who he wants to be, dress up how he wants to be, just be like every other healthy child. He's 10 years old, and he's living Mishlach Manos with his father. And they're crossing the road, and Benji's one step behind his father. His father, he gets to the other side of the road, and he hears a car reversing. He only has a second to turn around, and he sees that Benji's been thrown across the road, and his head's bumping up and down. He looks up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, "Now this." He runs over to Benji. He sees that Benji's been smashed in the head. It looks terrible. Someone calls Hatzalah. Hatzalah, come. They rush him to hospital. And you can see in the doctor's look, the look of defeat. They take him into the operating theater, and he thinks to himself, "You know, what else have I got to do? I can only daven." And he's davening there and davening for what seems like a lifetime. And the doctor comes out after a couple of hours. And you can see on the doctor's face, it's like a look of amazement. It's not like a look of a sense of relief. It's not a look of, you know, we've been successful. It's a look of shock and amazement. So he asks the doctor, "Is everything okay?" And he says, "Your Benji is going to live. But I saw your son. I can recognize when I see a tumor exactly what's going to happen. I can tell whether a child or person is going to live or die. When I saw the damage that was done to your son's head, I didn't think there was much chance. Because when there's big damage to the head and there's bleeding, then that swelling causes the blood to push pressure onto the brain, causing irreversible damage, Rahman al-Islam. But you know what? I still decided we're going to give it a chance, we're going to give it a shot." And we take him into the operating theater, and we open up his head, and we see that instead of the blood that had been hemorrhaging, causing pressure on the brain, there was a pool, there was an empty space in the brain, some part of the brain that wasn't there, that allowed for the blood to go into, to take away from the pressure on the brain. We don't always get to see the plan. We don't get to see the elements of the journey that are designed to shape our life. Some may see it years later, some might never see it. But every once in a while we get a glimpse of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand leading us in our life. And the things that we thought were the worst were really there. Years later, we're reaping the benefits from it. To live a life which is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the center of our life means that our perspective in life, we're able to adjust it. We're able to adjust it now, but not in the chaveri. We're able to think, is there something to hate, really? Is there anything to justify? The way we touched up, Sinas Chinam, means the ideology you can hate, what they stand for. But the person himself is nothing to hate. The more you look into the person, we understand is a neshama, is a yid. There's no mocking for hatred. There's no mocking for sinner. And that same avoida is the same thing we've got to change in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To change it from a matter of besinas Hashem to understanding that it's all matter. That the Mora itself was all coming from a place of Ahava. If a person lives with that, with the self-center, with the center of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at their center, you come like Yeshua. Yeshua and Kalev said, Olam Naleh. We can do HaKadosh Baruch Hu's day. Every moment of our life is nothing that we can't take on. There's nothing that's impossible for us. And then by the time it comes to Tisha B'Av, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can say, you've done your part. The sinner is over. The sinner between Ben Adam and Chaveiro, the sinner between Ben Adam and Mokim is over. It should be the last Tisha B'Av. We shouldn't have to use our kinnis again. And Mitzvah Hashem, the Tisha B'Av of Moed, of the Moed of Tisha B'Av should be a real Moed this year.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.